Turn it on to me to turn me on. Click, now I can start speaking. Sometimes it feels like that. You're given so many talks for so many years, and it's like just turning the switch on and the talk comes out. But today, I wanted to do a special talk, make it a little bit different, because instead of doing the same old thing day after day, and especially the same old way of guided meditation, if you miss that, it's always online. So today, I was going to, because it's Waysak time, there's a little Waysak meditation which I did, which was very useful. It is a bit inventive, but when I first did it, it really worked excellently. And surprise, surprise, where I first invented this was when I was in Singapore, and that I was asked to teach early in the morning at a school about something to do with the Waysak, that's the birth, enlightenment, final passing away of the Buddha Day, which we're celebrating tomorrow. That's why you see all the flags out. And so I just thought it was a school. But then when I actually got there, it was like a, not even a kindergarten, like a preschool, a pre-kindergarten. So the kids there, about 4, 5, and 6. I thought, how on earth can you teach the kids about Waysak, birth, enlightenment, passing away of the Buddha? And, you know, often I like being put on the spot because it makes you, forces you to innovate. And so I thought, oh my goodness. There was a big picture of a statue of the Buddha there, like the statue we have over here. And so I said, well, look, today is supposed to be recognizing the enlightenment of the Buddha. So, kids, I know you can't explain that to five, six-year-old kids. It's hard enough to explain that to 30, 45-year-old professors at university. So I said, okay, what we'll do, you see, you can see how the Buddha is sitting. You try and sit like that, and then close your eyes. And with your eyes closed, just imagine you're the Buddha. And I got this from when I was a kid, and apparently that some teachers still do this. When I was a child at primary school, that I was asked with the rest of the teachers and the rest of the kids in the class to stand up and close your eyes, imagine you're a tree. Put out your arms and you're a tree in the forest, blowing in the wind. Did you ever do that at school? Some are nodding and did that. And I still remember that because as a kid, no, 6 or 7 years old when I did that, again, you can't really intellectually understand it, but you can imagine it. And the boundaries of your being are not restricted by all this knowledge which you have accumulated as you grow. So your imagination could be very, very wide and free. And you can imagine what it's like to be a tree. And so remembering that, I said, imagine that you're the Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree. And I taught a lot about that and how it must have felt. And instead of asking you to focus on your breathing or, you know, feelings in your body or watching your breath, just get the emotional peace and stillness and kindness and contentment and tranquility. Start to arouse that inside of you. And it worked really well. The kids were sitting there, and my goodness, they were actually meditating. And they were meditating because just instead of just saying, okay, now sit still, you know, just make yourself comfortable, watch this, watch that, or watch something else. It was using their powers of imagination and the ability just to be what they imagined. And I was just guiding what that imaginary object would be. Now being a Buddha, fully in line, totally at peace. And little by little, they really got into it, and they meditated a long time. But what was really interesting, because it was such a young class, many of the parents were there, and of course the teachers were there. And they really got into it. They got into it so well, they asked me, said, in the evening, I know you're supposed to be teaching meditation, somebody else, can you teach that meditation? And I did, and that's where it started, just this imagining you're the Buddha meditation. And people loved it. Not only other people loved it, but I loved it too. Because you know, whenever I'm teaching meditation, that other people, that I'm actually doing it myself as well. So I really can feel just the peace and that tranquility. It's really cool. And so I usually don't do that too often. But because it's a Waisak ceremony this weekend, I thought, oh, this is a wonderful opportunity to do that. It was also, I felt a little bit of, oh, should I do that? Imagining that you're the Buddha, imagine every one of you imagining you're the Buddha. Isn't that just a bit of disrespect towards the Buddha? Because no, not at all. Just if you imagine you're the Buddha, you're not the Buddha, but you're getting some of the attributes, some of the feelings, what it must be like to be in that state. And the peace and the freedom which you can feel directly, very quickly, is well worth it. So what I usually do is a guided meditation, and it takes about a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes to get into it. And then as usual, with all the guided meditations, especially the ones on the Saturday afternoon, you try and give as much time as possible afterwards for people just to carry on. You guide people into a certain state and then let them explore that state once they're there and enjoy themselves. So it's a little Buddha meditation. And the reason you teach many, many different types of meditation is after a while they're not really different. You put one this side, one that side, you can understand how the whole process works. But also it means that when people come here, it's not listening to the same old thing again and again and again. Listen to a slightly different aspect of it, which enriches your ability to meditate and your understanding how this mind really works. So that's what we're going to do. And as usual, I have to always say this, that those of you who come to the introduction to meditation class, that is on the building to my right. So as you get in here, just you go out the gate, turn right, and the next building along there, that's where the introduction to meditation class is. This is the ongoing class. Okay, so a very quick introduction today. I think everyone's okay, so let's give it a try. So if you can get into your meditation posture as best you possibly can. And I'll usually start the usual way, is just getting you comfortable first of all. But then instead of going off the normal way I teach, then I'll get you to start using your powers of imagination, visualization. It's cool. So, great. So first of all, close your eyes. And with your eyes closed, do it more rapidly than usual. How are your legs feeling right now? I'm checking all the legs and the butt on the cushion. So get my legs in a comfortable spot. Not too much tightness and tension. It's amazing, once you start awareness, you're aware of one thing and another thing. The next thing I was aware of is my belt is really tight. So I loosen that. Works much nicer. So my legs, I know the usual places where there can be some aches and pains. I'm checking those. The feet are fine. The knees are not too stressed by bending. And the butt is well positioned on top of the cushion. I don't mind spending a lot of time at the beginning adjusting my body, because then I don't need to adjust it at all afterwards. It's an investment of my mindfulness to put it into the comfort of my body. And then I look at my back, again, always give it a good stretch. Just get into the habit of doing that, because it feels good. And then be more aware of things inside the body. Just the intestines and the organs seem to be fine. The chest, the lungs, the heart. Being aware and knowing how to calm things down. When you are aware of any muscle in the body, any organ in the body, any part of the body, you can notice it changes. But I also notice why it changes. What is the cause which makes a feeling in the body more tight? And what is the cause for things feeling more relaxed, more at ease? You can give it your own name, but it's how to relax your body. And then sometimes people say, oh, but Ajahn Brahm, you're doing things. Actually, it's noticing that because you were doing things, that's why the body was tight. And not doing things, relaxing, opening up, letting go, releasing, freeing. Those are like a not doing. And that is what really eases my body. Just checking all those places where I need to let go a little bit more in my body. I get to my shoulders, relaxing them. Loosening them. I know the feeling of tightness, I know the feeling of relaxation. I know which causes each. And I just quickly scan down my arms. My hands. I'm just giving to myself because I don't know why, but I always get my hands in the wrong position until I look at them. And then they become in a good position, comfortable. And just back out to my shoulders again, making sure they're still relaxed, to my throat. The reason my throat was because I have some irritation, hay fever. Just going to relax that as much as I possibly can. Making sure the head is also well balanced on top of the neck. And then go to the front of the face. Relaxing all the muscles in your face. So any signs of anticipation, any signs of dread, any signs of just holding the heaviness of the past, which you can see written on people's faces by the muscle alignments. And all those muscles are totally at ease and relaxed. Psychologically, it shows you're not really holding much. Your face is at ease, reflecting that your mind is at ease. And I go to my whole body. My whole body just sitting here. Any other place which I missed out, someone else said last night about the jaw, fine, please have a look. If it needs attention, relax it. But finally I come to the whole body, unified, joined together, working together, at ease together. I can feel any discomfort, focus on it, care for it. And it nearly always just gets this beautiful state of ease. And now I'm going to switch over to this special Waisak meditation. So just imagine what it must be like to be a Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree. It's beautiful, green, lush, full of leaves, tree. And it's in this park over 25 centuries ago, a beautiful park by a river, the Nirmala River, in the Ganges Valley. In those days, that park would have been so quiet, hardly anyone there. In May, in this hot season, but by the river, it would feel much cooler. It was under the shade of a great tree. And the Buddha would have had this beautiful meal, according to the story. It was a meal which was made for like heavenly deities as an offering. It was given to the Buddha. He was sitting on a beautiful saffron, comfortable, at the root of a tree. He was just enlightened. Imagine what that must have felt like, coming out of deep meditations and realizing nothing else is needed in the whole world. His body perfectly at peace. Only a 35-year-old. Peaceful, comfortable, in a quiet place, with no business to be done. No idea of bills and work and obligations. He had no obligations at all. Perfectly free, content, at ease. No family commitments. No doctor's appointments. No concerns about work or lack of work. Just totally at ease in this moment. No destinations. What we call these days a bucket list. There's nothing left on the list to do. Everything which could be known, he had penetrated and seen. Nothing left to do, just to enjoy this moment, to be at peace, with nothing missing, nothing incomplete, real tranquility, because of very deep, unmoving contentment. There will be the sound of birds like the birds here, the sound of the river in the distance. He had no business with any of it. He was free. No responsibilities at all. He'd worked, done his job. It's like being free, or being on a holiday, but a real holy day, deep inside. Nowhere to go, because nowhere to go to. And happy just being here. All the past, all the business, the failures and the triumphs of the past, all put in perspective. They're gone. Gone a long time ago. The journey has ended. No more travelling, be quiet. No more packing, planning, considering. All of that busyness has vanished. All you have is a perfect rest, the ease of having nothing more to be done. What had to be done has been done forever. Just sitting down, listening peacefully, not needing to comment or to think or to work anything out, all theories and philosophies have reached their end. You have the answer, at peace, at ease. If nothing is missing, there's nothing to do, nothing to search for. You can really be, instead of trying to be somewhere else. Fully accepting, because this is beautiful, free, perfect. And the thinking stops. It starts because thinking is always looking at faults, things which are missing, things which need to be done. All that is over. You reach the end of the journey. Now you can relax. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to do anything. Really at peace. Not because you force yourself to be at peace. There's no other option. You're not trying to work anything out. Not trying to send the mind into deep meditation. You don't need to do anything. You just are at peace, having understood. You realize this is nothing which can be ever taken away. It's not a temporary thing which you have for a while and it fades away. This is real, pure. And you feel there's nothing being done. You're enjoying the peace. Of not going anywhere. Not needing to change anything. Just being here. Peaceful, at ease. Even time loses its meaning. Contentment, ease, not wanting, eradicates time. It's like you're out of a prison. You're free, at ease, liberated from the currents of wanting, which made you flow out into the world and around the world and back again. Now you don't need to go anywhere. Your mind stops moving. You're the Buddha, enlightened, at peace, a deep peace, a blissful peace. As this experience grows and stabilizes, it's got a word in the suttas, a taste of freedom. Just imagining it. But the distance between imagination and reality is not that far. And I think you do. Too much of your meditation, you're doing something, trying to get somewhere, trying to stop something. Now you're the Buddha, you don't have to do that anymore. This moment just is. You don't need anything. You have nothing to lose. You have nothing. Totally at peace. Because you need nothing. Nothing more required. The journey has ended. I'm now going to be quiet. When I start speaking again, you'll be close to the end of the meditation. Getting close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? What's it like inside? Peace, freedom, freedom from thoughts, freedom from control. What are the attributes of peace? Now as you move out to your body, how are the legs and the torso and hands and head? How comfortable do they feel? You don't hold the body still. You let it be still. So we'll now ring the gong 3 times. When the 3rd ringing vanishes, it's a signal to come out from your meditation. Excellent. Yeah, come on. But are there any questions from the floor here? Okay, we've got a few questions here from overseas, from Canada, Netherlands, 2 from Indonesia, and 1 from Sweden. From number 1 from Canada, is learning about the jhanas important for one's practice, or is simply practicing Samatha Vipassana good enough? Do we need to identify a specific jhana when we experience it? It's the jhanas, there's a deep stillness, deep peace. That's when the body vanishes, the 5 senses are no longer present for you. You have a lot of energy, a lot of bliss. Samatha Vipassana is the jhanas and the insight related to them. So the question is, learning about jhanas or practicing Samatha Vipassana is exactly the same. And do we need to identify a specific jhana when we experience it? No. As soon as you experience anything of the intensity and a simplicity and peace of a jhana, it's so powerful. When you come out afterwards, within the jhana, you're way too still and peaceful to know exactly where you are. You're high energy, perfect mindfulness. But it's only afterwards. You have a look, what was that? And of course, there's little tricks which you know which one it was. But even just one of them is just so beautiful, so wonderful. And you don't really need to know exactly which one it is at first. Just that will come later on. It's just what happens when you meditate. When you disappear, you let go a lot. Mind becomes so still, so peaceful and powerful. But it dominates the other 5 senses. So you have left is the mind state. And that's one of the definitions of a jhana. It's vivicchehi kammehi, separated, distant, not connected for this time to the 5 senses, and really blissed out. And of course you get a huge amount of insights from that experience. It's like you've dug a mine and struck gold. And of course, there's lots of gold there to mine the insights. From the Netherlands, why we should remain calm when we are starting experience nimittas, if it's so pleasant. Isn't the whole experience of meditation should through letting go to lead us to happiness? Different type of happinesses. And after a while, when you get a connoisseur of happiness, you realize the stillness. The more stillness, the more power of the mind, the more happiness you experience. So when you really start to experience these nimittas, these are when the mind starts to dominate and the five senses become very weak. There what you experience is usually beautiful lights, and very powerful, very beautiful. But excitement spoils them, and the experience can't last. And when you get excited, that's usually the hindrance, and the nimittas vanish. So you have to learn how to be at peace with these things. Otherwise they run away. The usual simile is that these are beautiful animals coming out of the forest in the evening to drink by the still forest pool. But they're very shy animals. I know that people in the jungle are always afraid of wild animals. But the animals are more afraid of us. Human beings are the most dangerous animal in the forest. So if those beautiful animals, they can't really see very clearly. They can smell and listen. If they know there's somebody there, they'll just go back into the bush and won't come out again. So if you remain calm when nimittas come, then the beautiful ones come out and they last a long, 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 long time. And of course it gets even deeper than that as well. The whole experience of meditation should, through letting go, lead us to happiness. It does lead to happiness and incredible calm and peace and stillness. We're not talking about the mindfulness disappearing and you sleeping. It's a totally different thing. Here you are fully aware. You've never been as mindful as aware before. From Indonesia, during meditation I manage to relax my body, being kind and making peace to my mind, but thoughts keep coming in. What should I do? Let them come in, let them go out. Don't control them, don't try and own them. Stand a distance away. This is just a metaphor. When the thoughts come in, don't give them importance. They're just like clouds going across the sky. And if you give them importance, that's a good thought, that's a bad thought, wow, imagine that. If you give them importance, of course they will stay. And instead that when the thoughts comes in, before it came in, can you notice the silence? After it left, can you notice the silence? And after a while you find that it's not just all thoughts, there are gaps between the thoughts. Silences. And those silences are much more beautiful than the thoughts. The thoughts actually don't answer questions. They don't solve problems. The thoughts actually make more problems. More questions to be asked. But when the thoughts stop, then the answers are very clear. Okay, you make peace to your mind, but thoughts keep coming in. Just make peace to the thoughts. Don't fight them. Don't challenge them. Just take away their importance, and they'll disappear. Also from Indonesia, I'm just starting learning meditation. My question is, I'm just relaxing myself while meditating. Should I focus on one thing? Thank you. Especially if you start meditation, you do the guided meditations, it always starts to lead you onto one thing. It's you don't really so much focus on one thing, but you let go of everything else. So there's nothing else to really focus on. You let go of the past, let go of the future. The thinking stops, the body vanishes. You're just with the mind. And just allow yourself to be with that. In this moment, silent. And those become beautiful experiences. And you don't need to focus. You don't give the orders and control. Just the beautiful states of mind arise, joyful. profound, and they draw you in. It's their beauty pulls you into their center. Not that you force yourself into their center. It's the nature of the human mind. If you see something beautiful up in the sky, like a full moon, it draws you in. People look at it, because it's gorgeous. And even more so, beautiful nimittas, they pull you into them. You just let them take you. Beautiful mind. And just refocus that way. Totally natural. Last here from Sweden. When I meditate, I get so relaxed that I fall asleep. How do I prevent that? Don't try to prevent that, because if you're that relaxed, you fall asleep. It's because your body's taken the opportunity to actually to turn off and have a bit of a rest. You probably find you're what we call sleep deprived, which means that, you know, you just, your body's taking the opportunity to catch up on some downtime. Don't fight that, just stay with it. And after a while you'll find that instead of falling asleep, it's almost like you have just a choice, a fork in the road. And you're mindful of that. One will lead to sleep, the other one will lead to peace and awareness. And after a while, just the peace and awareness is far more joyful, far more relaxing than sleep. So you'll find the sleepiness will disappear very naturally. Don't be embarrassed about feeling sleepy. Don't try and fight your sleepiness, that just wastes more energy. Just see if you can allow the energies of your body and your mind to increase naturally by not wasting the energies. And then the mind becomes so strong, it doesn't want to fall asleep. Many times when I was young, and even sometimes these days, sometimes you get such beautiful experiences, you can't fall asleep. Remember this one time, this was as a student. I'd been travelling all day, up all night, but I was on a boat, an old fishing boat, going from the west, no, the east coast of Guatemala, up the coast of the Caribbean, watching the dawn come up on the Caribbean coast in a boat, and then we went into this river. I was on my way to those Mayan ruins in Tikal. But I remember I was just so tired physically. But the sunrise over the Caribbean was just breathtaking. There's no way I could fall asleep. It was too beautiful. We've all had experiences like that, great experience of nature. And the beauty stops you falling asleep. Now, that's the closest simile I can get to some of the meditation states. You may be physically exhausted. Where your experience is just so delightful that you can't sleep. It's just too much fun. Enjoying yourself. And of course, if it's stillness, rather than watching a sunrise, stillness is much more powerful. And it's also because you're not doing anything, your energy comes back into your body and into your mind pretty quickly. You don't need to sleep. I often notice that during meditation retreats, especially when you have your own meditation retreats, rather than teaching them. My own personal retreats, then your requirement for sleep goes way down. You don't need to sleep so much because your meditation is just really getting high and you're energizing. Anyway, those are just the questions here. We had 5 questions. So is there any questions from people here and on the floor, as they say? Those who are here. No? Okay. Very good. So we can now bow. It's a little bit earlier, 4:11. So we now bow and then your personal questions can come up afterwards. I can't escape, I know that.